Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.
Now, this is back when there were editorial cartoonists and Four Seasons.
I will fly to LA and I'll be there for a day and I'll fly back and this is all going to work out.
And I looked at this one guy and he had on a shirt that said Lynyrd Skynyrd on the front. And I said, wow, did y'all get to the concert tonight?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I am Jessica Hankin.
And this week on the podcast, Brush with Fame. Three stories about mere mortals who cross paths with some famous dudes.
This first story is told by Gary Huck, who is a political cartoonist and just has such a great dry delivery. The story takes place some years ago. He references Dances with Wolves. If that gives you any hints about who the story might involve, take a listen to Gary's story.
It's 1992. The Association of Editorial Cartoonists is having their annual meeting in Austin, Texas, at the Four Seasons Hotel. Now, this is back when there were editorial cartoonists and Four Seasons. After arriving at the hotel, we're informed that Clint Eastwood and Kevin Costner are also staying at the hotel, scouting locations for a film. We're also told that Clint Eastwood has been invited to address the convention, but Kevin Costner wasn't, and he didn't take the news well. So that night at dinner, cartoonists from all over the nation are applying their trade and thinking of mean things to say to Kevin Costner. My contribution, twofold. The first is that, okay, that's not the first. There is a first. And the first is that Pauline Kael had written this devastating review of Dances with Wolves, where she referred to Kevin Costner's character as plays with cameras. The second came from the 1983 film The Big Chill. In The Big Chill, the plot is a group of college activists reunite to bury a friend who's committed suicide. The friend who committed suicide is played by Kevin Costner, but all of his scenes were cut from the movie except for the one where he appears as the corpse. So my line was, I really enjoyed you in The Big Chill. The final day of the convention comes. We attend the final dinner. Molly Ivins is a speaker. This is back when we had Molly Ivins. And after the dinner's over, a group of us meet on a pier in the back of the hotel that overlooks the Charles River, and we drank. It's the Colorado River, by the way. And we drank, and we smoked, and we laughed, and we joked until the wee hours of the morning. And at 4 a.m., the cartoonist from Minneapolis, Minnesota, fell asleep with his head on the shoulder of the cartoonist from Madison, Wisconsin. And we knew it was time to return to our rooms. And as we fell onto the elevator, not unlike clowns falling out of a clown car, there at the back of the lift was none other than Plays with Cameras. And he's scowling at us, and he says, you cartoonists think you're pretty special, don't you? And I spun around and I said, you know. Thank you.
Speaking of great, dry sense of humor, this next storyteller, Barbara Wilgus, has a story about, I feel like this is like a light stalking story, right? A little light stalking of a gentleman with a dry sense of humor, at least in the parts he plays. Take a listen to Barbara's story.
So in early 2015, I was hard at work putting together my first production, my first creation for Fluid Movement, which was a production called Goldblum, the Water Ballet. Thank you. Good night. Goldblum, the plot synopsis of Goldblum is that Jeff Goldblum, having an existential crisis, in the midst of an existential crisis, gets magically transported into a spiritual journey through his entire film history in the form of water ballet. So it was a heavy lift. Not only because it was one of the more out there things that had ever been proposed to date for a Fluid Movement, but also, I know that's saying a lot, but also it was a fictional, you know, story that was written, but about a very real, very famous man with a whole lot of films, that many of which were huge films from huge studios and production companies. So I lived in a constant fear in like around January, February. All I could think was, oh, cease and desist, cease and desist. The letter's going to come any day, cease and desist. So what a normal person would do, you know, call his agent or manager, studio, get an entertainment lawyer to look at the script and make sure it fell within satire guidelines. Yeah, no, none of that. So what myself and my co-creators did instead was, in our extensive online research of Jeff Goldblum, we learned that he played with a jazz band called the Mildred Snitzer Orchestra, and that they periodically played at this tiny little club in Echo Park, Los Angeles, called the Rockwell. And it's probably like half the size of this room. So teeny tiny little club. And you heard all these anecdotes about people getting to go there and meet Jeff Goldblum and take pictures with Jeff Goldblum. So we thought, that's a plan. I'll fly out there and show him, you know, a poster and tell him about the water ballet and everything will be great. So that was the plan. So my tax return comes so I can afford the plane ticket. So we go, all right, now let's look. So we look at the Rockwell schedule, and the only date, so there's no performances, and then March 25th, and then nothing for the remainder of the summer. So it was like, okay, well, March 25th, that's the day. And I looked at my work schedule, and I could take off literally the 2 days surrounding that. So it's like, okay, I will fly to LA, and I'll be there for a day, and I'll fly back, and this is all going to work out. And so my Fluid Movement friends, Amber and Josh, who had just moved to Echo Park, got in on the shenanigans, and they said they would host me. So we bought our tickets at the Rockwell. I bought my plane ticket, and here I go. So flew out, and then March 25th, you know, got my little posters printed up so I would have a thing to show him that, you know, all my hard work. And we go, and here's the show, and it is this little tiny club, and we get our seats and are sitting. And lo and behold, just like had been told to me on the internet, back in the back room, here comes Jeff Goldblum himself walking in and greeting all the tables of people. And we're like a ways away, but the second I saw him, the very first thing that kicked into my head, this is really rude and I can't do this. So I turned to Amber and Josh and said, you know what, this is really rude and I can't do this. It turns out this was a huge mistake and can't do it. It's rude. Can't do it. It's rude. And that's all I could say. I was totally spiraling. So here comes Jeff Goldblum walking through the crowd, greeting all the tables, and I'm just, this is rude, this is rude, this is rude, this is rude. I can't do this. And he's getting closer and closer, and I'm accepting my defeat. It's all over. It's done. And goddess bless her, Amber Eisenman, takes me, he's approaching our table, takes me, shoves me at Jeff Goldblum, and as we're standing at each other, just completely startled, she says, this is Barbara, and she's writing a water ballet about you. And so here I am holding my, clutching my little posters. I printed two, one for me and one for him. I printed two, and I said, yes, it's true. I'm writing a water ballet about Jeff Goldblum taking a spiritual and philosophical journey through his whole entire film history in the form of water ballet. And this really tall man, as it turns out too, looks down at me, turns his head a couple times, and says, well, that's about the greatest thing I've ever heard of. Proceeds to, and this is where you learn that Jeff Goldblum is a hugger. He's a big hugger, people. Get in on it if you meet him. He swoops me in his arm. So now I'm like this. And meanwhile, I'm, you know, Amber, a friend, taking pictures and stuff. And finally, I'm kind of telling him about the show and stuff, that we've been working on it. And I'm also like, here is this poster. Will you sign this poster? And somehow, with an arm still around me, he reaches some other arm around and signs it. And I said, okay, that's like a contract. And handed it. He asked for the other poster, so I handed it to him, and we think, okay, that's cool. Then he proceeds to, he has his audience patter, and he proceeds to turn around and, like, tell the whole audience. Like, he's talking about his movies, Jurassic Park, and all these other things that he's fixing to go film, and he's like, and guess what? There's this thing. It's a water ballet. It's like synchronized swimming. I want to be in it. Come tell me about it. Comes back to interview me about the water ballet, where I'm like, again, a fictional Jeff Goldblum will go through his spiritual and philosophical journey in the form of water ballet. And we had intentionally set the plot within his least popular movie, a brilliant movie called Pittsburgh. And I said, you know, it's centered around the film, around Pittsburgh. And he says, Pittsburgh? And I said, yes. And he says, the film. And I said, the film. So he turns to the audience and says, so they're doing a water ballet, and it's about me. And I'm going to take a spiritual journey through my film history. And it's centered around the film Pittsburgh. And he hands the other poster to, as it turns out, his manager agent. And his manager agent looks at the poster and looks at me and says, well, now five people will watch that film. And he laughed. They laughed. He went on up to the stage, did his show. I turned to Amber and Josh, and we were like, oh my God, we did it. So we did it. We didn't get sued. The water ballet went on to be a great success. I'm very proud of it. And Jeff Goldblum went on to live his life. Although I'll say, somewhere down the road, like, he had this TV show where he goes and, like, does things. He never showed up for my water ballet. But he had this TV show where he, like, learns how to do things. And he learned how to do synchronized swimming, which I gave side eye to, until I was like, oh, you know, I stole your life. It's okay. Steal mine back. Fine. But most importantly, forever, for me, for the other Fluid Movement people at the time, and now for you, because we are Fluid Movement, and so are you, March 25th is here and forevermore, Jeff Goldblum Day, because it's the day that you just decide to do some wackadoodle thing because it's your dream, And through the magic that is Jeff Goldblum, all your dreams will come true.
What I love so much about, I mean, I love so many things about Barbara's story. I love that she talks about fluid movement and that, which is just this Baltimore institution. If you're not familiar with it, it started off as a way to bring community to the arts and they do a lot of synchronized swimming.
And you're going to do it this year, right?
Oh, no. Okay. I would love to, but I don't have the time to do it. But I love that she was, you know, such a Southern girl that she's like, it's rude. She's just like, she
yeah,
felt like it would be very rude to do that. And it, in fact, was not. It was such a delight for Mr. Goldblum.
That's right. Being polite doesn't get you very far. It really doesn't. That's the moral of that story. Before we listen to our third story for today, we're going to take a quick break. I listened to the story this weekend preparing for the podcast, and I hadn't heard it probably, I don't know, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Oh, my God. I still laugh my ass off.
She is very, very funny. Please take a listen to Mimi Dietrich's story about her brush with fame with a...
Don't say.
Well, I won't say.
There's two things that you need to know before I start to tell the story. One is that I am a quilter, and most people who think about quilters think of us as little old, you know, grandmothers who sit around and stitch. The second thing I need you to know is that Lynyrd Skynyrd is a Southern rock band. I've always wanted to meet a rock star. 2 months ago, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, there was a huge gathering of quilters. Probably about 5,000 quilters go to Hershey, Pennsylvania at the end of July. Last year when we were there, the band that played a big concert was the Jonas Brothers. This year, it was Kid Rock and Lynyrd Skynyrd. So, all right. I didn't know Freebird before this whole thing happened. So the night of the big concert, four of us went out to dinner, and we were sitting there in front of the hotel waiting for everybody to kind of get together, and these two gigantic buses came through the parking lot of the hotel, Lynyrd Skynyrd. They had a police escort, and they were on the way to the concert. We went to dinner. We had a great time. We had a wonderful time. We came back about 2.5 hours later, and two of my friends decided that they were going to go up to the room in the hotel, and myself and another friend decided that we needed to stop in the coffee shop and get bananas for breakfast the next morning. So we went in, we got our bananas, and we're holding our bananas in our hands. And we're on the first floor of the hotel, and we knew exactly where we were going, where the elevators were. So we came around the corner, an elevator was open, we hopped in the elevator, and the doors closed. And as the doors closed, we realized that there we were, standing there with two bananas, it was the shortest I've ever felt. Two little quilters in little pink shirts that said Quilt Odyssey. Surrounded by huge people with black shirts, lots of hair, and more tattoos than we've ever seen in Hershey, Pennsylvania. So we looked up and said, well, guess you're not quilters, are you? And they said, no, ma'am, we're not. But my grandmother quilted. And the other guy says, my grandmother quilted too. And so we had this little conversation about grandmother's quilting and everything. And I looked at this one guy, and he had on a shirt that said Lynyrd Skynyrd on the front. And I said, wow, did y'all get to the concert tonight? And they said, why, yes, ma'am, we did. We're the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band. And so, you know, we were real impressed. I found out later that they were the ones who sang, well, Freebird is their, you know, real big song. Sweet Home Alabama, Sweet Home Alabama, if anybody knows that. So the one big fella says to us, well, ma'am, what floor do you want to get off on? And we said, 5. And they said, oh, we're on 5-2. So we got to the 5th floor, and the doors to the elevator opened. And my friend and I started walking down the hall. And, oh, by the way, they had told us they were in room 5821. We were in 5803. So as we're walking down the hall, both of us were thinking the same thing. Safety first, safety first, safety first. You're in a hotel. You're in a hotel. You never tell anybody your room number in a hotel. So as we're walking down the hotel, my friend is thinking, let's go get ice. But I couldn't read her mind. I don't know what came over me. I turned around, because we were, of course, being followed by a rock band. And I said, would y'all do us a favor? And they said, yes, we will. Ma'am, what would you like? And I said, well, our friend's room is up the hall. Would you come up and surprise them? So it's like, don't take them to your own room. Take them to your friend's room. So we made sure everybody was decent. Knocked on the door, walked in, made sure everybody was okay, and said, oh, we brought some friends to see you. We walked into their room with the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band. And the one guy went up to my, he was actually the lead singer, he went up to my friend who's a little younger than me and said, hi, ma'am, my name is Johnny Van Sant. She goes, yes, I know.
Say it with me now. Freebird. I love how she said Freebird. You know, Lynyrd Skynyrd, they were a Southern rock band. Were you at the concert? And like, oh my God, that's hilarious. Just, do you remember she first told a story at a holiday show about getting stuck in an elevator, like in a Hopkins parking garage or something?
Getting stuck in a bathroom?
No, I'm pretty sure it was an elevator. It was so funny.
I don't remember that at all, but I will now go back and listen
to
our incredible archive of thousands of stories.
And you've had several brushes with fame.
Yes, in fact.
You've brushed your body up against several famous people.
Well, we don't
people.
Need to go into, and not several, just a few highly famous people. But one time I took Laura, do you remember when I took you to Jimmy Fallon's birthday party?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And we saw Sacha Baron Cohen.
I did not know who that was at the time.
Yeah, that's how old we are.
My gosh. Well, enough about us. We're going to let you go and try to brush up against some famous people your own damn selves.
Actually, don't do it.
You might get
inevitably.
No, also, they're not that interesting.
No, it's disappointing. It's just going to be disappointing.
It's true. It's really true. So we want to thank Maureen Harvey for editing out all my coughs during this episode and producing the podcast. And you can visit stoopstorytelling.com for more stories and upcoming shows. We really thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with more stories from the Stoop.
Support comes from Catholic Charities. Driven by the message of love your neighbor, Catholic Charities is focused on improving lives in Maryland. Give the gift of love during this holiday season and learn more at cc-md.org/love.